Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, Jason, on a very serious note to open up today's show, Aroldis Chapman was struck in the head by a line drive yesterday, and he will require some surgery to repair a fracture in his skull. They're going to be putting a metal plate in his head. This begs the question, do you think pitchers need to start considering protective headgear?
Well, I mean, I guess the question is consider. I think, yeah, they need to consider it. I mean, I think you're going to get a lot of pushback, just like you're going to get from certain players in the NFL, you know, but there's also certain players in the NFL that really do believe that concussions are something that need to be addressed. So I think if you can give those guys that want to protect themselves a chance to protect their melons, maybe that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and I've always been curious about this. Brandon McCarthy was one of the players who's been struck recently in the head by a line drive, and he's been one of the loudest advocates that he won't wear anything until they come up with something that will fully protect him. I mean, I would think anything is better than nothing. You know, they were rolling out some of those, it was like Kevlar-lined hats or something. They looked kind of funny, and apparently players said they were uncomfortable. And it kind of reminded me of when David Wright got plunked in the head during an at-bat a few years ago, came back, and he had the new helmets that were, like, impact-tested for fastballs faster than 85 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And everybody was, like, busting his balls about that. They called it, like, the gazoo hat and all that. But, you know, like, the helmet is tested to protect for a fastball above 90 miles an hour. You know, those helmets that they were wearing prior to that weren't. And guys aren't throwing 85 miles an hour anymore.
Yeah. The fastest pitcher in the league is not Greg Maddux anymore.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely with you. I think they need to come up with some kind of alternative, and I think they need to do it fast. I mean, the doctor that was quoted in the ESPN article about Aroldis Chapman said, Aroldis Chapman is a very, very lucky guy or whatever. I mean, how much longer do you want to keep hoping that guys that get hit in the head with line drives are very, very lucky? Because one of these times, they're not going to be.
Right.
And you want to be proactive instead of reactive.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. You know, it's like you're going to wait for someone to die before you do something.
Right. And, you know, like, maybe it's because they don't have, you know, a union standing up for them. But do you remember when all the base coaches had to go on to the field wearing the skull caps, at least? You know, they didn't have to wear, like, flapped helmets, but they had to wear, like, the skull caps. Oh, and that was the biggest to-do ever. You would think that you were, you know, asking them to club baby seals to death or something.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we're not going to wear these plastic hats out there. Like, oh, that's stupid. You know, and it was probably the same thing when they made players start wearing helmets initially in the batter's box, and then they made players start wearing flaps on their helmets. I mean, you're always going to get pushback, and I don't quite understand it when you're trying to protect yourself, but I guess it is what it is.
Well, I mean, you know, this isn't a new thing. I mean, you know, Herb Score got hit in the face as a Cleveland Indians pitcher in 1957.
Right, yeah.
And broke, you know, a bunch of facial bones, hurt his eye. I mean,
oh, it's ended careers.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it basically ended his career. I mean,
right.
He continued to play, but, you know, he changed his motion to avoid, you know, leaving himself out there. You know,
I think he might have even been the pitcher who said that he was scared every time he let go of the ball. Was that him?
I think it was. I'm reading right now a thing about, according to this, Score himself rejected that he feared being hit by another ball. But he then...
I'm going to do some digging, because I know I've read, and I think we're probably thinking of the same guy. I know I've read a story about a player who was hit, and his career ended because he couldn't, you know, he just couldn't throw the ball like he used to because he was just scared of the ball returning off the bat.
I mean, look at it this way, okay? Whatever the reason, in 1956, Herb Score, as a second-year player, went 20-9 with a 2.53 ERA and 263 strikeouts. By 1958, he tore a tendon in his arm, and by 1959, he wasn't pitching anymore.
Jeez.
Well, for the Indians, I guess he pitched three
right.
years. I mean, it's like, that's not, you know. And he's saying, like, I changed my motion because I hurt my elbow and overcompensated for it. And that made my velocity drop and led to more injuries. Well, I guess if that's, you know, what he's going to say, we can't say anything different. But him getting hit in the face definitely had an impact on his career. I mean, it's obvious when you look back at Travis Hafner getting hit in the face. I think it was like, well, that was probably 6 years ago. But I mean, that took him a long time to get over. You know, I don't think Lonnie Chisenhall's the same ever since he got hit in the face.
Right. Yeah, it's weird how a 90 mile an hour projectile launched at your face will change your perspective on things. And I mean, you think about Aroldis Chapman, he's throwing 100 miles an hour. Someone's hitting that ball, you know it's returning faster than that.
Well, that's the thing, right? Everyone always says, like, oh, man, I wouldn't want to stand in the box if Aroldis Chapman was throwing. I wouldn't want to stand in the box if Randy Johnson was throwing. That's going 100. Imagine yeah. It's coming right back at you.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That's a humming.
The way you're standing, you got your melon hanging out there where you can't even protect yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I hope the issue is addressed, and I hope, you know, for the sake of player safety, that something's put in place to protect them. Because like I said, I don't want it to be a reactive measure that they have to take. I'd much rather it be proactive.
Right. But as you said, I think it's going to have to be something that's, you know, either looks cool enough that it's accepted or something that's mandated.
Right.
Because you're going to get a lot of pushback.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Athletes are stubborn creatures of habit, typically, so.
Yeah.
Who knows? Someone's going to make a lot of money off it, though.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, well, Jason, we're getting down to the wire with spring training. So today we're going to be talking about what's been going on in Cleveland's camp. We'll hit up Pittsburgh. We'll give you guys a quick little summary of what we have coming up. We've got some articles and some special podcasts coming up. As we get ready to gear up for the season, much like we did last year. So we'll kind of fill you guys in on that as well. So, Jason, let's kickstart things with the Cleveland Indians. What's been going on in Cleveland? Actually, not in Cleveland, in Goodyear. Let's go to Goodyear.
Yeah, nothing's been going on in Cleveland. It's been cold and
snow and rain.
And rainy. But out in Goodyear, it looks beautiful from what I see.
Gorgeous.
And the first bit of news, though, is a concerning bit of news, and that's Michael Bourne has re-injured his left hamstring, which is in fact the same hamstring he injured on the last day of the 2013 season.
Can I just say that staff writer Chris Bradley and I are in an auto new league through Fangraphs. Great fantasy baseball league, by the way. Would recommend it for any interested parties. I just drafted Michael Bourne in that league for, like, I think it was like $12 or $16 or something like that. Well, and it was the next couple days he goes out and blows up his hamstring.
Well, now there's a couple things to keep in mind here.
All right. Reassure me, Jason. Is it going to be okay?
Well, some are good and some are bad. Okay.
Okay. Well, can we start with the good first?
Yeah. The good is that the Indians haven't exactly said, at least anywhere I can find, where exactly. You know, as we learned from Dr. Garrett last October, you can have different hamstring injuries. And they haven't said exactly where this injury is, but they said it's not the same one that he had surgery on last year. Like, that was behind his knee, apparently.
Okay.
Now, and this is actually, I linked in my Noise on the North Coast that I posted today, I think it's podcast episode number 33, which is our end of this. We wrap up our preseason predictions. We look back at our predictions.
Yeah.
I think it's like around the 8:40 or 9 minute mark. Dr. Garrett discusses the whole injury. So it's all there, you know, the grimy details of a hamstring injury. And Dr. Garrett says that behind the knee, the one Bourne had is maybe the best one to get.
as far as injuring your hamstring goes.
Right. So that's the good and the bad, right? Like, it's not in the same place as the one that was repaired through surgery. But if you go back and listen to that episode, Dr. Garrett says that the one that he had repaired, there's not much information about, like, rehabbing that injury because it's not as common, but it's not
right.
as bad as, like, the distal one, which is higher up. So, whatever that means.
So there's that.
So there's that. But there,
now let me just ask you this, because if you're a Cleveland fan, you can't be feeling good about that, though, regardless of whether it's like, oh, it's the least worst hamstring injury. I mean,
well, no, this is the thing. The one that he had surgically repaired, was the least worst one. And so they're saying, oh, it's in a different spot. Like, that's a good thing.
But that's actually a bad thing, right?
As we learned from Dr. Garrett, that might be bad. There's like another injury that isn't so bad. And then I believe it's the distal one, which is up higher, is the worst one. Now, here's the thing. They're calling it a mild strain, which, of course, that's good, right? It's better than severe or tear, right? Those are two words you don't want to hear. Now, curious, though, they're saying that he could miss, like, a week. But normal recovery from a mild hamstring strain is 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay. So... Do you think this was this like a precautionary spring thing then?
Well, that's what we don't really know. You know, it's possible. It's also possible that this is just some misinformation why they look into it more. You know what I mean?
Right.
We've seen that, you know, with the Pirates and the Indians before. They're major league teams of any sport, you know, are famous for that.
Right.
So I guess the reality is a week puts him like maybe a day or two before opening day for the Indians.
Right.
3 or 4 weeks puts him, you know, obviously into April. And I mean, I guess if I was the Indians, I think it's time to err on the side of caution here, right? With your 32-year-old, $12 million center fielder. You might not want to push it.
Right.
In April. I mean, he...
Just slide Brantley over to center.
Right. You can let Brantley play center, and Murphy can go from right to left, and Rayburn can play right, or...
Yeah, I was just going to say, you got Rayburn, the team MVP for the first 2 weeks of the season last year.
Or, I mean, we'll get into... Maybe this later, and I discussed the roster construction in my article today. But, you know, obviously if Bourne starts on the DL, that means you're going to keep an extra outfielder. And it's not like they don't have guys like Nigel Morgan or Jeff Francoeur or Matt Carson that they could keep.
Right, yeah.
I mean, depending on what Michael Bourne you get, you might find it's not that much of a loss.
That's a very valid point. How long does he have this year and next year under contract, or just this year left?
He has 3 years left.
Oh, he has three. It was after this season or including this season?
2 years after this season.
Okay, so he has this year, next year, and the following year.
It was 4 years, $48 million.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I thought it was three for whatever reason. Probably because I don't have a good memory.
I'm pretty sure. So
keep an eye on Michael Bourne.
It's something to monitor. And I mean,
it could be serious. It could not be serious.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much where we're at right now. They have options, definitely short term. Definitely short term options
that
are pretty solid. Although, you know, Nigel Morgan and Matt Carson are nursing injuries. And the next guy would, I don't know, maybe it would be Tyler Holt. And I think he left a game with an injury. So, but throw on top of that, they've been using, I think this in the past week, both Mike Aviles and Elliot Johnson both got a start in center field. So there's that.
There is that.
But honestly, like you said, Brantley can play center. Murphy can even play center. And I really think Aviles could play a corner outfield. He's done it before.
Right.
Without much trouble. So I don't really think it's that big of a deal. You know, other than the sunk cost of Michael Bourne, obviously.
Which is a bit of a big deal, but...
Yeah.
That's a different discussion altogether.
And you really have to know if it's a long-term injury before that discussion's even worth having, so...
Yeah. So, what's going on at third base? This has been my, this has been my favorite thing to keep an eye on this, this spring.
Well... Lonnie Chisenhall is actually, he's not setting the world on fire, but he's holding his own, you know. I think the big thing they were looking for from him this spring was cutting down on the strikeouts. And he has 10 strikeouts and 5 walks, I think, the last time I looked, which isn't great, but that is cutting down on the strikeouts for him.
Yeah.
And I think he's hitting around 260 or so, and he's looking okay in the field. I think he made 2 errors yesterday, which the Plain Dealer basically had a headline today, like, Chisenhall stinks it up at third base. And it's like, oh, my goodness.
I love how you present their headlines. That's
if you go there, I'm not really exaggerating.
That's pretty much what they are.
I go there, but their website is so bad. Programmed, it just like bogs my computer down to horrible levels. But anyways, now Carlos Santana hasn't hurt himself at third base, you know.
Always a plus.
He's made some really nice plays. I actually have one saved on my DVR that I need to try to capture and post because I haven't found it online anywhere.
Yeah.
Where he jumps and backhands a ball in the air, like over the bag, lands, plants off his right foot, and throws an absolute howitzer. Like when you see the hit, you think the play is going to be close, but his throw is so strong, the guy's out by 3 strides. And so he's done that, and then he's, you know, thrown some balls in the bleachers and whatever.
Right.
But I think, rightfully, they're happy enough with Chisenhall's spring that they're like, okay, we can't just jettison him. You know, he needs to get one more crack here. And so I think what you're going to see is Chisenhall being the quote-unquote starter, but not playing third against left-handers. And Santana will probably start at third against lefties. And kind of bowing to that reality, the Indians had Carlos Santana catch a game yesterday, which was the first game he's caught all spring. And they said, you know, well, it's time to see if Carlos can bounce back and forth. He thinks that he can, but it's time to see.
Right.
And he caught the game. He caught like 5 or 6 innings, and there was no incidents there. And I don't, you know, it's one of those things that's hard to pinpoint. Like, I'm skeptical that he will be able to bounce back and forth, but I'm not really sure what I think is going to happen. I just know that I've seen him so many times let balls get by him through lazy form, you know?
Right.
Just not moving and blocking well, not getting his glove down. And I just can see, like, if he's played third, you know, he played first, then he played third 2 days, then he DH'd, and now he's catching. He's going to be back there and just kind of not mentally there, and balls are going to be going through the wickets left and right. But, I mean, if he could do that, there's no one else in the league. No one else who's a switch hitting catcher / third base / first base / DH with on base skills like him and power like him.
Right.
I mean, his value would just go through the roof. And of course, you know, if by June, the end of June, Chisenhall stinks, then you have a different scenario and he might not have to bounce around anymore. So that's kind of where we're at right now, is like I think they're embracing this idea that Carlos is going to have to play somewhere other than third because Lonnie is doing okay.
Right.
And so I think what they need to find out, because it impacts their roster so much, is do we need a backup catcher, right? Which is what I've been saying the whole time, that I don't think he can do both. And so they're trying to figure that out. Like, do we need to keep Matt Trainer or Mr. Misty May Trainer?
There we go.
Or, you know, Luke Carlin or someone. But that's going to be a wasted spot, essentially.
Right.
I mean, that person's going to play like 1 or 2 days a week and they're not going to hit it all. That spot's supposed to be for Giambi.
But you got to keep him gamefully employed.
Yeah. Now, he's got a broken rib.
Yeah, he's out for how long? He's out for a couple weeks.
3 to 4 weeks or something. So
yeah.
He won't be on the opening day roster. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if he – what happens, whether he just becomes a coach or
– Right.
Accepts a rehab assignment and then who
– Whether he pulls the old Jake Taylor in Major League 2.
I think that would probably be the best thing at this point, but I know Bob would agree with me there. But the thing is, if you don't have to keep Giambi and you keep, say, like Aviles, Elliot Johnson, who is having a good spring, and like Francoeur, you can get away with Francona's lovely 8-man bullpen that he likes so much.
Because yeah.
Elliot Johnson and Aviles can play basically anywhere. If you have to carry Giambi, they're going to have to go, I think, to the 7-man bullpen. But we can talk about pitching a little bit as far as the fifth rotation spot.
I'm kind of curious about that, too, because that's part of Pittsburgh's spring so far has been their fifth rotation spot. What's going on with your guys over there?
Well, you know, Carlos Carrasco was the odds-on favorite pretty much because he doesn't have an option left. I mean, the Indians said, like, Carlos is going to make the team. He's either going to be in the bullpen or he's going to be in the rotation. He started off okay. He pitched poorly yesterday. The Plain Dealer added him to the sensational Chisenhall headline. It was like, Chisenhall stinks, Carrasco not much better, or something like that. And I was kind of like, wow, man, they're really ragging on him for one bad spring training game. Reading through the article, it seems like he pitched a B game the other day that didn't go very well either. And then there were some quotes from Francona basically saying, like, I was disappointed that he got away from his fastball. I was frustrated that he gave up on it so easily when he was starting to get hit. So, I mean, obviously there's a little bit of frustration there if he's saying those things to the press. The reality, though, is I just don't see him not getting a chance. You know, it's April.
Right.
Give him some starts before you banish him to the bullpen. I mean, this is it. He doesn't have an option anymore. If you put him in the bullpen and he stinks, what are you going to do with him? You know, I think the scenario is probably like, well, let's give him a handful of starts. And if we need Josh Tomlin, we can call up Josh Tomlin. The problem, I think, is that Aaron Harang's having a really good spring. And they're looking around at all these people getting Tommy John surgery. I mean, you know, Medlin and Beach. Is Beachy getting Tommy John too?
I haven't heard anything on Beachy yet. He shouldn't be getting Tommy John because he just had it last season. But
he's still pitching poorly.
Right. And his velocity was down. And I think I'll have to go Google it just to double check. But I think they may have been shutting him down for a little bit.
There was someone else, Patrick Corbin. That's who I'm thinking of.
Oh, yeah, Corbin.
He's going to get Tommy John now. I think they're looking around and
Jared Parker just blew up his elbow.
Jared Parker. I think they're looking around and they're like, there's no way Aaron Harang's going to accept an assignment to the minors.
Oh, no. Beachy, never mind. Beachy is. He's having, just this morning they announced, he's having his second Tommy John surgery, too.
That's what I thought.
So that's Beachy and Medlin who are both having their second Tommy John. Jared Parker's having his second Tommy John. My buddy sent me a text the other day. He said, this is how I would describe Atlanta's spring. Our pitcher's arms are falling off.
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty accurate, jeez, actually.
Yeah.
So I think, rightly, they're like, if we try to option him, he's just going to refuse. You know, maybe we should give him 5 starts to see if he's still got anything left in the tank. But at that point, you have to put Carrasco in the bullpen. And I don't know how well that's going to go.
Yeah.
I mean, people like to ride on, like, the fact that he had, like, 8 good appearances out of the bullpen last year. Well, he's had 8 good starts over his career, too. I mean, so that's, I mean, they want to give that job to Carrasco, but right now it kind of is looking like he's doing everything possible to not be given the job. Like, he's putting every doubt possible in their mind. And some of that is because Tomlin's doing really well and Harang's pitching well. And so they're like,
right,
well, maybe this isn't the way to go. But
I will say, if you want to hang your hat on Aaron Harang pitching well at any point during the season,
well,
I don't know, man.
I think the thing is, though, like, if you're them, right, you took the risk, you've given him the spring innings, maybe he's only got 10 good starts in him. Maybe you should get those 10 good starts out before you
cut him. Yeah.
You know, it's like the Derek Lowe signing, remember? He was good like a month and then just was like, okay, I'm out of gas. I'm just going to throw gopher balls now.
Then we have statistical normalization happening.
Yeah, right. So that's why I think they're going to stick with Carrasco and they're just going to – they'll trade Harang for, you know, a bucket of balls or something. But
yeah. So what's going on with Big Nasty Masty's contract?
Well, nothing.
Nothing going on that front, huh?
But there's this rumor, okay? There's this rumor circulating that if something was going to get worked out, that they wouldn't announce it in Arizona. Because imagine if you're the Indians front office and you sign Justin Masterson to a contract extension. That's probably the greatest contract extension you've ever managed to wrangle, right?
Right.
So you don't want to sign it in Arizona where, like, each paper has sent, like, one person. You want to do it, like, in front of everybody, right? And the other factor is that Justin Masterson's wife is very pregnant right now.
So
there's this idea of, like, okay, you know, we want, like, and Justin probably would want, because he is a very family, you know, oriented person. He would want his wife there. He would want, you know, all these people around him. And right now, it just seems like maybe even if you did agree to something, it's not the right time for anyone to announce it. So I guess when you look back and they signed Jake Westbrook to a contract extension, that's exactly what happened. It was actually, I guess, agreed to out in Arizona, and then they waited until the day of the home opener to announce it.
So I love when you go next level on all this.
So there's some rumblings that the fact that we don't hear anything isn't really an issue. I mean, the reality of this is an ownership decision. It has nothing to do with the front office. You know, I think if you're Chris Antonetti, he's already walked in and made his case that he wants to sign him.
Right.
It's a question of whether the ownership wants to commit that big a chunk of their money toward one player, and whether, you know, they tell Antonetti, like, well, if you do this, you can't sign Kipnis, you can't sign, you know, whatever.
Yeah, they're going to have to raise the beer prices at the stadium, Jason.
Might have to. But that's the scuttlebutt there.
All right. So what's really quick before we move on to Pittsburgh with your prospects. We've been releasing our prospects little bits at a time. We've been doing them five at a time here. What'd you just release today? Did we do 10 through 6 today in Cleveland?
Yeah, I did 10 through 6 today.
Who do we have? Any sexy prospects?
Well, in the 10 through 6 bunch.
That was when we had Joey Wendell, Carlos Moncrief, my boy.
Yeah, we had Wendell, Moncrief, Tyler Naquin, Cody Anderson, and Jesus Aguilar.
Jesus and Carlos, two of my faves.
And in the past, you know, people who listen to the show should definitely go check out the previous articles because I talk about some guys that I've only ever mentioned briefly or maybe not mentioned at all, like Kyle Crockett and Jake Lowry and Eric Gonzalez and Lugo, who's an interesting Latin American pitching prospect that they signed a few years ago, and he's starting to move up, Jordan Smith. So, yeah, it's worth checking out. It's a lot different list than last year, and I would say that that is a good thing.
Yeah, starting to shake some of these low-level guys up towards the top there, huh?
Yeah, and some of those guys that were, like, organizational filler from previous bad drafts have started to get winnowed out.
Right, yeah.
It's going to be a great year to watch Akron. Because they're probably going to have Lindor. They might have Tony Wolters. They'll probably have Tyler Naquin and Cody Anderson and Joey Wendell.
I was going to say, Joey Wendell, is he going to be there too?
Yeah. And Eric Gonzalez will probably be there at some point. Gonzalez is a really interesting prospect because he was only in A-ball last year, but they protected him on the 40-man this offseason and invited him to spring training. So he's going to be a fun guy to watch. He was rolling around spring training in Goodyear with like a Spider-Man Under Armour shirt all the time, I guess.
I like that guy already.
He was wearing it under his top, you know, and it had like the spider webs coming down his arms.
Right.
Supposedly somebody was like, nice Spider-Man shirt, Eric. And he went, he was shooting webs at him.
Did he actually have like the canned confetti?
No, he didn't. No.
Oh, that would have been so opportune.
He was taking infield at the time, so
I wish he would have just had it in his back pocket.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to Pittsburgh. We're gonna start off on a somber note over here. Former Pirate great Ralph Kiner passed away at 91 years of age. Kiner's one of those like Hall of Fame ballplayers that you don't realize how good he was until you actually go look at his numbers. So, I mean, if you're not familiar with Ralph Kiner's career, just go to Baseball Reference. I mean, he had a short career as far as like Hall of Fame baseball players go. You know, he spent 7 years with Pittsburgh. You know, he had a couple years at the end tacked on. I think it was with the Mets at the end of his career, which is how he ended up broadcasting there. But I mean, like one of the premier power hitters of his generation. He's one of those ball players I remember, you know, like my grandparents, you know, would be talking about, or, you know, even like my fiance's grandpa, when I talk to him now, always talks about Ralph Kiner and the rinky dinks and, you know, how Kiner was like basically the best player in Pittsburgh, you know, for like a 10, 15 year period of time. There was, you know, it was just Ralph Kiner. And other than that, they had nobody worth talking about. You know, and then he went on to have a phenomenal broadcasting career with the Mets, you know. So, you know, kind of sad, you know, both Pittsburgh and the Mets acknowledged his fantastic career and his contributions to Major League Baseball. So sad to see him go, but make sure that you celebrate his past. And if you're not familiar with Ralph Kiner, go take a peek at his career on Baseball Reference. His numbers are they're pretty amazing for the period of time that he played.
They are. If you're not familiar, you should definitely check them out. It's surprising.
So moving on to spring training, Wandy Rodriguez threw 4 innings against the Red Sox last night.
Wandy, all right.
Yeah, he's back on the radar there. So he gave up 4 hits, a walk, a run. I think he struck out a batter or two. And he stated after the game he just needs to work on his curveball. You know, the last 2 innings he said he threw a lot of those pitches. He just doesn't feel like it's ready to go. And, you know, just kind of like that typical spring training talk, like he's still trying to get himself into gear. Wandy's kind of, I don't know. I mean, I look at Pittsburgh's rotation and I'm really curious to see how Hurdle's going to construct it. I mean, as it stands right now, you know who your key players are, which are going to be Liriano, Gerrit Cole, and Charlie Morton up at the top.
Right.
Presumably Wandy Rodriguez, as long as he's healthy. You know, he's going to be in there as well. Then you get down to that 5th spot, and that's kind of where you have this, you know, this little log jam of stuff. You know, at this point, you have to assume Brandon Compton is being optioned and coming up only for emergencies at this point. You've got Jeff Locke coming off a great first half of last year, not so great second half.
Yeah.
And you have your $5 million man, Edinson Volquez, who's got 5 million reasons to get to work it out. I'd assume he's going to end up being kind of like Jonathan Sanchez was last year, where, you know, we're going to give you a couple starts to show us that you figured out this changeup. And if not, well.
Oh, he's going to get more than a couple starts.
I don't know.
He's got to go at least a month.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, you got to get a month, right? What are you getting, 4 or 5 starts?
I mean, I know for position players, they always say 40 games. So, I don't know. That's what, a quarter of the season.
So, yeah.
So, you got to give him at least 5 or 6 starts.
So, I don't know. I mean,
$1 million for each start.
Oh, jeez. It's making me perspire just thinking about it. But,
well, that's the going rate. I mean, that's what the Dodgers are paying Kershaw. So,
I mean, you look at it and it's 1 year, $5 million. You're out from underneath it, regardless.
Yeah,
but that was money. I guess the whole crux of the debate, which we've been talking about all spring long, is you could have spent that money elsewhere.
Right.
And you know, hindsight is always 20/20. And again, I've said it before. I think Neil Huntington in his deepest, darkest moments will admit to you that they screwed the pooch this spring.
I think you're right.
What are you going to do, though? I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to throw Edinson Volquez out there and see what happens. But
see what sticks.
I mean, the top 3 are set. And as long as everybody stays healthy with Liriano, Cole, and Morton, you know, you feel pretty good about those top 3. And then I guess, you know, we get what we get from Wandy at this point, and it'll be interesting to see how Hurdle manages all of this stuff. I mean, on top of this, you have complications like Stomy Pimentel. You know, he has to be on the active roster this year. So Pimentel is either coming out of the bullpen, which is what it kind of looks like is going to be happening as of right now.
Right.
I mean, you start looking at some of the pieces that have to go places, and you're going to end up with guys like right now, Robert Temple tweeted out that it looks like Vin Mazzaro is the odd man out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Mazzaro was good at what he was last year, which was coming in, filling in those spots where you needed a guy to just come in and suck up a couple innings for you, you know, in long relief, like when Jonathan Sanchez was getting, you know, tossed out of the game before he could record an out.
Right.
So you start looking at these pieces in the bullpen and the rotation, and it makes navigating a roster a little bit trickier with some of the inflexibilities that you have. And I don't know what you get for Vin Mazzaro on the trade market at any point during the season, let alone at this point in the season when teams are, you know, feeling confident about their internal options, but
yeah,
who knows?
I'm also seeing that, like, the Pirates are willing to move Genmar Gomez or Brian Morris.
I haven't heard Brian Morris. I've heard that they're feeling really good about Brian Morris. I haven't seen anything about Genmar Gomez, but presumably they would be fine with moving him, I would assume, as well. Although, you know, again, Gomez was one of those guys last year who came in those mop-up innings whenever you needed somebody to start eating up those innings. And he was great in that role last season.
Right.
You know, like you would look at Genmar Gomez as a relief pitcher. You know, he came in, he threw 68 innings. He had a .243 average against. You know, he was a valuable piece for Pittsburgh last year. He got his innings when we needed him to get those innings, when we needed just an arm to be right in there.
Well, according to this, they'd rather keep Gomez because he can start, but that right. Gomez, Morris, and Mazzaro are all out of options.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's pieces that have to be in place, and you don't have, you know, like I said, that flexibility that you would like to have. That's how you end up with guys like Brandon Compton's probably going to be a better pitcher than Wandy Rodriguez, than Edinson Volquez, but because he has options and, you know, they haven't spent that money on him, you know, he's going to start out the year down on the farm and fill in whenever they need him to.
Right.
One of the neat things about this spring, we've seen the challenge system kind of unrolled a little bit. And Clint Hurdle used his first challenge of the spring against the Sox yesterday. There was an inning-ending out at second base against the Red Sox, and the whole situation was there was an out, runner on second, and there was a comebacker to the pitcher. The pitcher caught it, threw to second base, got the runner into a rundown. The runner got tagged out. And then it was Will Middlebrooks who tagged him out. Then Middlebrooks sprinted towards second base, dived and tagged out Jaff Decker, who was trying to get Jaff to second during the whole thing. Jaff, yes. Not Jeff. Jaff. As I've heard pronounced several times this spring, Jaff. So he was called out. You know, Hurdle challenged it. Call was upheld. Quick, easy, simple. It, you know, the end of the world didn't happen. I was kind of concerned for all those people, all those traditional baseball fans that are like, oh, replays ruining baseball. Like, I thought maybe the infield would split open and the apocalypse would start, but it didn't. Okay. And the call was upheld. Everything was all right, and the game just kept going on. And it didn't take a 10-minute argument, someone kicking around dirt and throwing hats around, and it was what it was, and it was over. So, kind of like, what do you think of the challenge system so far? I'm digging it. I like how it's being used. I think it's efficient.
I haven't had a problem with it. I honestly haven't seen it used too many times because the Indians haven't had many opportunities. And I think the one time it was used, it wasn't Francona that challenged, and it was like a goofy situation, like in the game, an umpire, not the umpire, I should say, a base umpire, got hit by a line drive, and so they had to take him out. So then they had to go and get the guy out of the replay truck to take his spot. And so then when they challenged it, they had to, like, run off the field.
Right.
Run in the truck or some nonsense. But I think they even still said it only lasted, like, a minute.
Right.
So, I mean, that sounds good to me. I mean, my thing is just my only problem, I don't care so much about the time, you know, as long as they keep it short.
Reasonable.
Obviously,
right,
yeah. If this drags on, like, for hours, then that's not a good thing. Games are already long enough. But my whole thing is just, there's still going to be plays that aren't right. You know, it happens all the time in the NFL, whether it's an umpire seeing something that we don't see, or whether they just, you can't tell, you know? They. I remember the umpire in that instance said, he's like, the first two camera angles, you couldn't see anything. You know, and there's going to be times where that happens, and everyone's like, well, my goodness, it's wrong. Come on. And the guys are going to come out, and they're going to say, nope, leave it the way it is. And somebody's going to get upset because that's the way, because it's going to get replayed 1,000 times on MLB Network. But
right, yeah. I'm digging it. I like it. I think it's been efficient so far. I think, like you said, you know, like a minute in, we're out.
Yeah.
It's over. That's that. I mean, it doesn't give you room to have these big, like, 5-minute tirades where you're just begging to get ejected. Yep. Like, managers are going to have to, they're going to have to work a little harder to get ejected this year because of the, you know, they're going to have an opportunity to kind of look at these plays. I like it.
Oh, they can still get ejected on balls and strikes because you can't challenge that, right?
Yeah, that's what you're going to have to. Yeah, you're going to have to go out of your way to get ejected. Yeah, you're going to have to find new creative ways.
Oh, yeah.
I look forward to it.
New reasons to kick dirt.
Yeah, exactly. So some interesting news this week. One of Pittsburgh's top prospects, Wyatt Matheson, is switching from catcher to third base.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Which, now, this is kind of interesting because Matheson, as a prep player before he was drafted, played the majority of his time at short. They thought, you know, he had the athletic ability and the baseball knowledge and everything to make the transition behind home plate. So Kyle Starr came out and kind of stated what was on everybody's mind. He said he's being moved to third base to get him every day at bats because he's going to be getting stuck behind Reese McGuire if he stays behind home plate, or he's going to have to stay in extended spring training.
Right.
Now, we know catching last year really slowed his development. You know, he was catching some great arms. He was banged up. He'd hurt his shoulder. And the learning curve for catchers is incredibly steep to begin with. And the thing that Pittsburgh liked about Matheson was his athleticism, was his bat. And so when they had a guy like Reese McGuire who has all the skills that they like and want and can do everything behind home plate already, now they have the flexibility to say, okay, well, we don't need Matheson back there. We've already got, you know, now we have McGuire back here. This gives us an option to move Matheson and his athleticism to another position to get the most out of his bat. I like the move. I was kind of surprised to see it happen. But I think it's going to end up, you know, working out in Matheson's favor. And Pittsburgh has already done this with, you know, Neil Walker was one of those guys drafted as a great prep catcher, ended up making the transition to the infield, you know, bounced around a little bit before he settled on second base. So hopefully we have a similar career trajectory with Wyatt Matheson there.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not uncommon for a prospect to be moved, you know?
No. Yeah, certainly not.
There's definitely, I mean, there's times when that's the right thing to do.
I mean, and you can go look at Matheson's numbers, and there's no doubt that last season, you know, he underperformed based on expectations and his talent and all that. And, you know, I think a lot of that was just trying to learn that catching position. It just, you know, it wears you down. It's tough to do.
Yeah.
You know, on top of the physical stuff.
That's why I will reveal soon that I didn't move Tony Wolters at all in my rankings from last year because it was his first year of catching as a professional baseball player, and he actually posted very similar offensive numbers and turned in a good performance as a catcher. And I don't
right, yeah, I mean, I don't see you can't how, be upset about that.
I can't see how you can move someone down after that performance. I mean, that's commendable.
Right.
I mean, obviously there'll be a big test when he, you know, because he was still in A-ball this year when he goes to Akron at some point, but to learn a new position and still contribute offensively is a huge, you know, testament to someone's abilities. So, you know, like you said, if it was obvious that it was wearing him down, then maybe that's the right, you know, right decision for him as a prospect.
Yeah. Now, sticking with the catchers, Pittsburgh's backup catcher, which they got in a trade with the Yankees, Chris Stewart, had knee surgery that has him out 4 to 6 weeks. So this is leaving Tony Sanchez's role, which it was presumed that he would be going to AAA, spending most of the season there, you know, working with Jameson Taillon, you know, maybe coming up if they needed him in a pinch, kind of like he did last year, you know, where he served as a DH in Anaheim to start his career. But now that's leaving Tony Sanchez's role kind of up in the air. It would seem, as far as if you're talking about what it seems like Pittsburgh's goals with Sanchez are, it would seem like going out and signing a catcher or, you know, trading for a catcher to bring in would make the most sense. Because if you're saying you want Tony Sanchez to get those everyday at-bats and get those everyday reps, you don't want to bring him up to, you know, sit behind Russell Martin 5-6 days a week.
Because how much longer is Russell Martin under contract?
This season.
Right. So they need him to be ready next year.
Right.
And you can't stifle his development just to be convenient this year.
Exactly. So that'll be something definitely to keep an eye on in Pittsburgh is what happens.
Yeah, you can probably go get Matt Traynor real cheap here in a couple weeks.
I'm sorry, who could we get?
Mr. Misty May Traynor.
Oh, ooh, I'd be interested in him. His wife is hot.
that's a good way to make roster decisions.
Yeah, the hotness of the wife. I'm sure that's got to be on one of those old scouts scouting sheets.
I'm sure that was in Chris Antonetti's mind when he signed Nick Swisher, right? That he was getting Joanna Garcia.
Yeah, like in Moneyball.
Actually, it is one of the things on the scouts checklist.
Yeah, he's got an ugly girlfriend. He's got no self-confidence.
That's what it is. Yeah, you're exactly right. They said.
Yeah.
What? Old scouts. Oh, man.
Yeah, I love it. Cigar-chomping old guys. He's got an ugly girlfriend. He can't play.
But yet, if you have a serious girlfriend, that's also a problem.
Yeah, like these scouts are licensed shrinks as well.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Clint Frazier said he was good friends with Austin Meadows, who was selected by the Pirates. They lived very close to one another.
Played against each other, yeah.
Yeah, and Clint Frazier did not have a girlfriend, and Austin Meadows had a very serious girlfriend. And Clint said in an interview that every time the scouts would come visit Austin, they'd go visit Clint afterwards, or vice versa. And then Austin would call him always and say, "Man, they ragging me about my girlfriend the whole time." That's all they want to talk about.
Just busting his chops.
Like, "No, about this girlfriend." like, how disgusting. None of your business, man.
Baseball.
Anyways, where are you at?
Last thing on the old agenda there I want to talk about is the Tabata Snyder rumors. Apparently the Pittsburgh Tribune Review reported that Pittsburgh's looking to move Jose Tabata and Travis Snyder, like, obviously. So
who's gonna play right field?
Yeah, I don't know. We put a scarecrow out there. I don't want to rag on Tabata because, you know, he's put up decent numbers in his career. Like, you go look at his numbers and they really aren't bad.
You better rag on him because in the last podcast you defended him.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, the thing about Tabata that's always kind of stuck in people's craw in Pittsburgh is he got that tag of, like, not hustling and not being that, like, I'm going to, you know, put in the extra work and once you get that label, that's hard to shake. And that's, I think, what sticks with people, especially fans in Pittsburgh. But, I mean, if he put up a season where he hit 270 across 500 at-bats, I mean, nobody's going to complain about that. I just don't think – I mean, Gregory Polanco, I think, is going to end up playing his way into a position there. You know, he's going to be good enough at some point during the season where Pittsburgh's just not going to be able to ignore it anymore. Between his pop in his bat, the speed in his legs, I think he's kind of looking like he's going to be destined to be in their right field at some point this season.
When do you think? Because I drafted Gregory Polanco.
I mean, I think with any team like Pittsburgh, or when you're talking about Pittsburgh or the Tampas, you know, you're looking at whenever the Super 2 deadline is, I'd look at a couple days after that.
So it's like, I think it's like June.
Yeah, I mean, it pops up at, you know, some point in June. During every season, so
just
keep your eyes peeled on that. But yeah, I mean, like, if the news came out tomorrow, like, oh, Jose Tabata's been traded for middle relief, you know, lefty specialist, I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
But so if they're going to trade, I mean, who is going to start in right field?
It's going to be that just like that big cluster, kind of like the fifth starter spot. I think they're going to go with a hot hand, whoever's playing well. You know, Snyder had that offseason surgery, and he's been playing okay this spring. You know, you've got Jaff Decker, who the sabermetricians love because he's a, you know, I guess a great defensive player. Aside from the fact that he has the name Jaff working against him, because when was the last time you met a person named Jaff who'd succeeded at anything?
Jaff.
Never. Statistically speaking, I mean, the odds are really stacked against him in this case.
Yeah.
There's been zero famous Jaffs.
I think that's accurate.
Zero. So in recorded history, there's never been a person named Jaff that's done anything good. So he's got 3,000 years of history going against him. I mean, if Pittsburgh had an opportunity to move one of those guys for some kind of part, I'm sure they do it.
Yeah.
That's about it for today. I think that's it in Pittsburgh. The only other thing I wanted to make sure that we mentioned was everything that we have coming up in the next couple weeks, because I know Jason's been picking up the slack. I've been slacking like crazy with this grad class. These grad classes are just they're killing my baseball, Jason.
We've had something up every day for like the last week.
We have, between your noise on the North Coast that kept us good in the early goings on spring training. I did zero, like I didn't post any links, any schedules, any anything. Because I'm nose deep in curriculum and instruction right now, and it's really exciting reading, let me tell you.
But we're gonna get it all cleaned up here.
We are, yeah. The next couple weeks, once my schedule is a little bit freer, I'll be posting some more. But as it is, we've got our top 20 prospects rolling. We're rolling out 5 a day for Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Detroit. Chris is going to be posting a big NL Central preview for this season coming up. He's also going to be posting the top Eastern League prospects. So if you're a fan of the Erie Seawolves or any other team in the Eastern League, this would be a great one to keep an eye on. You know, that includes teams like the Altoona Curve, the Harrisburg Senators, you know, those other Eastern League teams that roll through.
The Akron Rubber Ducks.
The Rubber Ducks, yes. Chris requested an Akron Rubber Ducks hat. We got to make sure we get him one of those this season. Take a trip down to Akron, get him an authentic Rubber Ducks hat.
Rubber Ducky, you're the one.
You make baseball so much fun.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on the website. We're rolling out the prospects. We're going to have our second annual. Can we say second annual now?
Yeah, you can.
Our second annual Prospect Spectacular, where we kind of recap our top 20 prospects once we get that out. And we'll have our preseason predictions, which was my personal. I really enjoyed that last season. Yeah. I like our amateur prognosticating.
Yeah. Well, you may not have noticed, I filled in one blank on my part of the article so far.
But clearly not your favorite part.
But I knew exactly who I wanted for the one award, so I had to get in there and write it in before I forgot.
Right. Yeah.
I won't reveal it. It's a surprise.
Yeah. But save it. It's a surprise. It is a surprise. So keep your eyes peeled to the website, and we'll keep you updated on everything as it starts rolling out. Anything else we want to add, Jason? Anything else we got coming up that I missed?
I don't think so.
I should say, though, that there
is a regular season game this Saturday.
Oh, that's what I was just about to say. If you crazies want to wake up at 4 a.m. with me, I have my alarm already programmed in my phone. I'll be up at 3:35 Saturday morning.
I'm just going to DVR that, I think.
I'm going to go toast some bagels. I got some beer in the fridge.
Ooh, beer and bagels, huh?
Yeah, beer and bagels.
Wow.
It's breakfast, beer, and bagels. It's the 3 B's, very alliterative. And 4 B's, baseball, breakfast, beer, bagels.
And later, bowel movements.
Between the 4 a.m. beer and bagels and all the baseball, there's going to be some bowel movements. That's like, it's like a gross Dr. Seuss book.
Yeah, it is.
beer, bagels, baseball, bowel movements. That's the title of my first children's book I'm going to write.
Oof.
It's about 4 a.m. baseball in Australia. So, the regular season's kickstarting that weird two-game series in Australia. Then we go back to spring training before everybody else gets underway on the 31st. So we're winding down here. We're getting to the nitty-gritty before the season.
Yeah, I don't know whose stupid idea that game is.
Bud Selig's would be my guess. Most stupid ideas I give credit to Bud Selig for.
Bud.
That's a whole separate podcast as well, though. So, baseball. Real live baseball counts on Saturday. Counting on Saturday. So get your fantasy rosters set. Are we going to have a chance to record before the regular season starts again?
Before Saturday?
Probably next week. Yeah, next week we the real regular season.
it was a trick.
It was, nice job.
Next week, we'll probably record next week.
Yeah, well, because we'll be wrapping up our prospects and then getting all that stuff ready to go. So, we'll have another recording in there before the season actually gets underway.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for today. So we'd like to, again, thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes, give us a rate and review. You can check us out on the interwebs at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. And check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/TSM Baseball. So, for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
I sit on a throne of lies.
Jerk.